This is WRIR's election special interview with Jim Nachman, candidate opposite Eric Cantor for the U.S. House of Representatives seat in the 7th District of Virginia. We invited Eric Cantor, whose secretary responded with, quote, "We can't help you this year." So, unlike WRVA and Fox News, we have gone out of our way ahead of this interview to offer opportunity for dialogue. Welcome to Part 2, where we pick up on the discussion of what to do about the Military Commissions Act of 2006 that could allow the President of the United States to declare anyone, including American citizens, to be enemy combatants, and thus disappeared, that is, to seize and hold without charge, without notice to their family, friends, or lawyer, of any charges or that an arrest has even occurred.
See, what I'm concerned about is I'm reading right here that the ACLU has requested that the Department of Justice send in federal election observers to Chesterfield because of four acts: posting armed guards at polling places, misinforming voters that they must be carrying identification, refusing to count provisional ballots, and demanding Social Security numbers before issuing absentee ballots.
Right.
And then we've got the electronic voting machines in Northern Virginia and in Charlottesville that apparently they chose the wrong font, and so the full names of candidates are not going to appear, which is the last I heard. You know, it's just all of a sudden, with a week or two to go, all this stuff starts cropping up, but it's too late to do much about it. You know, it's just looking like all of a sudden here's a close race.
I don't believe that it's too late to do something about it. I mean, these are electronic voting machines.
That's what they say.
Why can't they be reprogrammed?
That is a great question, isn't it?
I don't understand why they can't be reprogrammed. I mean, I've had several discussions because with Kirk Showalter, who is the registrar in the city of Richmond, and you know, I have interaction with her because as the Richmond City Democratic chair, I recommend people to the electoral board to be appointed to the electoral board to the chief Richmond Circuit Court judge. And so two of my recommended appointees are on the electoral board, and you know, there's three electoral board members, and when you have a Democratic governor, you have two Democratic electoral board members and one Republican. And I also happen to know the Republican one because he's in the Masons with me. And I've had a lot of discussions about these voting machines with Kirk Showalter, and I, for the life of me, can't understand why they can't be reprogrammed so that they have the right font, so that the entire name appears on the ballot. It makes absolutely no sense to me.
Well, I agree with that, but since you're closer to it, I was hoping you had some more details.
I don't know. I mean, all I know is about the city of Richmond. I mean, I heard that this was happening in Northern Virginia.
Yes.
Alexandria, you know, I find it strange that since this is a Democratic stronghold, that Jim Webb is expected to do very well in Northern Virginia, that this is happening in Northern Virginia.
I think
it's quite a coincidence.
Yes, and similar coincidences throughout the last
right.
6 years. Yeah,
right.
So, I know. See, this is why I'm very concerned. I'm watching very closely, and I'm wondering, what can I do? And I know one thing I've chosen to do, and I'd love some comment from you, is I want to make sure every dollar I can does not go to people who vote for the MCA, does not go for people like George Bush who wanted the MCA, the Military Commissions Act of 2006, by the way, folks, if you didn't know what MCA means. So, for example, when I buy Citgo gasoline, they're owned by Venezuela.
Right.
So the money goes to Venezuela instead of Saudi kings and, of course, bypasses George Bush's friends along the way. Well, so I've realized that I need to buy heat for my house. I was going to get a natural gas heater. But when I buy natural gas, I'm stuck with whatever my provider chooses to get, whether that be in the West End, it's Columbia Gas. If it's in Richmond, it's Richmond. I'm stuck. But in the private market of oil, I could buy soybean oil from farmers right around here in Richmond. I can buy oil from Citgo. And so I'm going to buy an oil furnace for my house specifically because I want to do everything I can and not wait on an election. Do everything I can right now and in perpetuity until I'm disappeared or, you know, who knows.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, I think you have to start with yourself.
Yes.
And start taking these issues one by one and using yourself as an example. I think if we all did that, then collectively we would make a change. It helps if we're all, I mean, can identify the change we want to make so that we can all be working towards that particular goal. obviously.
Yeah, I know better.
I mean, that's supposedly why we have organized political parties.
But, you know, collection?
But reasonable minds can differ as to what's important and what the example should be. The thought that's going through my head now is like, you know, you're asking me about myself. I mean, my personal contribution is running for office.
That's a sizable contribution.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. It takes a lot of patience. I put a lot of money into this campaign myself. Both real money and in kind, and
you know, you got to use.
I'm working. I've identified, and I'm working towards certain goals. And you say policies or goals. You know, I mentioned about bringing our troops home because I think that's important. You know, you're talking about human lives that will be affected for a long time. It's affecting our economy. It's affecting our society. Again, you know, I talked about healthcare. Mm-hmm. That affects people's lives in real ways. You talk about our justice system, about our erosion of constitutional rights. That,
why aren't
to me as a lawyer, is a very. I mean, some conservatives will talk about that.
The MCA. There are conservatives upset about
some,
the MCA.
There are a few. You know, but you know the conservatives of old, like Barry Goldwater, who would have spoken out against something like this, are gone. They basically.
What about Warner? He's not a spring chicken.
No, he's not. And you know, when they were talking about the torture business, you know, he and McCain spoke up and they made a few changes. They didn't really go far enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I basically just, they should have just said, you know, it's the Geneva Convention or that's it.
Yeah.
And you know, I can bring up all sorts of scenarios, where, you know, people, I'm sure I could get, a lot of reactionary people to agree that, the Geneva Convention, we're just going to do, if there's a bomb, a nuclear bomb, and we got to like use torture to find out where that bomb is. I think most people would say, well, yeah, I mean, you got to do what you got to do to, you know, for the greater good.
Well, it turns out we just had a show recorded, which we haven't aired yet. We have a speaker who was a torturer who came to speak at a Richmond Peace Education Center event. And he stated that in his experience, there were people that they had captured who said that they had had information that they knew that Americans could use and did not give it because they figured they would get sucked into the system and tortured. So they just didn't bring up.
One of the problems with torture is you get a lot of false information.
On top of that.
Because people, you know, if they're being tortured, they're going to tell you anything you want to hear.
Yes.
Just so they'll be, you know, so you'll stop torturing them. In a scenario, the most extreme scenarios, yes, I'd probably agree that, yes, you got to do what you got to do in order to get the information. I mean, if you have really strong, hard information from somebody that there is a nuclear bomb and they know where it is and it's about to go off in 5 minutes. Yeah, I could see that you could suspend. And you know, it's not like they're not going to do it anyway.
Right.
So in those sort of extreme situations. But, you know, I think as a general policy, you know, as guidelines, no, you should not torture people because it's counterproductive. Not only is it not right, it's counterproductive. And I think if America is going to stand on the moral high ground, And if we want our country to be respected by other countries, we have to treat our enemies who are captured like we would want our troops to be treated. And I just think that that's the best policy.
How can we get back our honor? I mean, we have destroyed our moral high ground.
Well,
what are you going to do to restore?
You just have to change the policy, and you have to put these practices. You know, whatever you say, you have to put it into practice, and people will judge you from your actions and not your words.
I am heartened by the fact that when I went to Russia and Morocco, two places that are variably with or against us, that the population even there made a distinction between me as an American and my government. There are still people out there who just blanket, oh, you're a Russian, you're this, or you're a Korean, you're that. But people in large do seem to be finally making a distinction, unlike during the Cold War. So that gives me some hope. I'm still kind of thinking, what, you know, I'm looking at these election irregularities already, and I'm just not feeling spectacularly confident that electoral politics are the thing we should. I mean, you have to tell me, vote for me. That's what you're here to do.
Sure.
But as a citizen, I have to say that I'm concerned that just voting for somebody isn't good enough anymore, and that I need to find things to do every day. and they have to do things to find ways to pull power out.
Right, because when you vote for somebody, you're asking them to represent you.
Yes.
And hopefully when you're voting for them, you're basically trusting them to represent you and to follow your views. And if you read a lot of political treatises, there's a tension between a representative's personal beliefs and his principles and what the people want him to do. There's a constant tension between those two competing sort of values. And that's what makes American politics sort of difficult, I think. People hate Congress. They distrust Congress. They, as an institution, they hate it, but at the same time, they like their congressman. I don't know how to fix that other than to fix the system so that people can respect and trust their congressman once again and believe in them and have faith in them and trust them to do the right thing. I think that most people just think that politicians, that it doesn't make any difference. They're all alike and they're all in it for themselves and they're all getting rich up there in Washington. And I know that there's a lot of very good, well-meaning people, and there are some good representatives, but I think in a large part, the people have caught on to something. And they're, yes. The people are not stupid.
Well, if you get elected,
yes,
are you going to get rid of these electronic voting machines or otherwise dramatically reprogram them so that we have something we can trust? I don't trust a machine that has no other, because I used to work in databases.
I
adjust them.
I want to see an electronic machine with a paper manual backup.
Okay.
I do. Now, in talking to Kirk Sherwalter, she tells me that there are safeguards, and she told me what the safeguards are. I'm not an expert on voting machines. I talk to other registrars, and they tell me that electronic voting machines can be hacked into. Mm-hmm. Kirk Sherwalter tells me that that's not true, that they have certain safeguards and certain codes. And that, she and another person in their office are the ones that have the codes, and that's not really on the system. It's on a separate laptop, and it's locked in a safe. And it sounds good, but I'm not an expert. I don't know all the ins and outs of computers and how you can hack into them and get this information.
Well, I work.
But there's not a machine, whether it's a mechanical machine or electronic machine, that cannot be manipulated.
Right.
I think you have to have, I think electronic voting machines are probably okay as long as you have some proper safeguards. There's going to be no system that's perfect.
Right.
When I say safeguards, you have to, watch the people that are watching them sort of mentality to make sure that the system is legitimate, because people have to have faith that their vote is being correctly recorded.
Yeah, I must say at this point, I'm not feeling particularly confident at this point in history. Speaking of people asking things of their representative, ImpeachForPeace.org yesterday claimed that they had 270,000 downloads of what they call it a do-it-yourself impeachment. The website states, this is a short paragraph, before the House Judiciary Committee can put together articles of impeachment, someone must initiate impeachment procedure. Most often this occurs when a member of the House passes a resolution. Right. Another method outlined in the Jeffersonian Manual, however, is for individual citizens to submit a memorial for impeachment. What are you going to do with these? At this point, they're claiming around 250,000 of these.
Well, this is the thing. People have asked me this question. Jim, if you're elected, will you introduce a resolution for impeachment?
Yeah.
And my response is this, that if there is evidence that President Bush and people in his administration intentionally lied about the Iraqi war and why we went to war, then absolutely, yes, I will introduce a resolution for his impeachment. Mm-hmm. I'll say this. If President Clinton can be impeached or brought up in impeachment charges for what, his conduct was about lying about having sex or whatever you want to call it with Monica Lewinsky, then certainly – if the president intentionally plunged us into war, that for me, I would now have no problem introducing a resolution for his impeachment, and would be happy to introduce it.
Nancy Reagan said, "Just say no to addictions." But nonetheless, as I move forward through the years, I realize, you know what? She was actually right. I just wasn't ready to hear it, and I actually think that's where the United States is right now with oil. It's the right answer. Just say no. Don't cold. Got to go cold turkey. albeit not tomorrow morning, we have to take the actions that will result in cold turkey. Not tomorrow, next week, but instead of saying, let's do cleaner fuel research, let's just say, let's find other ways to power ourselves.
Sure.
And so what are you going to do? For example, there's the Million Roofs Initiative to have solar panels on a million houses. How can a terrorist disrupt a power grid that has a million power sources?
Right.
So what are you going to do?
Well,
I'm
open to all sorts of plans. I don't have one in mind in particular, mm-hmm. but I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm not an expert in energy either. I mean, I have to rely on experts, and I think we have to be creative, inventive. One thing for sure, my opponent really doesn't have any kind of idea of an energy policy.
This is WRIR's election special interview with Jim Nachman, candidate opposite Eric Cantor for the U.S. House of Representatives seat in the 7th District of Virginia. We invited Eric Cantor, whose secretary responded with, quote, "We can't help you this year." So, unlike WRVA and Fox News, we have gone out of our way ahead of this interview to offer opportunity for dialogue.
This is part two. Instead of saying, let's do cleaner fuel research, let's just say, let's find other ways to power ourselves.
Sure.
And so what are you going to do? For example, there's the Million Roofs Initiative to have solar panels on a million houses. How can a terrorist disrupt a power grid that has a million power sources?
Right.
So what are you going to do?
Well, I'm open to all sorts of plans. I don't have one in mind in particular, mm-hmm. but I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm not an expert in energy either. I mean, I have to rely on experts, and I think we have to be creative, inventive. One thing for sure, my opponent really doesn't have any kind of idea of an energy policy. I mean, he is for drilling for more oil in Alaska and in Nantucket Bay and exploring for gas off the Virginia coast. And he's received quite a bit of money from oil and nuclear interest. I know well over $87,000, and he votes with them. And, you know, he's touting in his TV commercials that he's working towards energy independence, but I really can't find any meaningful legislation that he is signed on to or introduced that would promote any sort of energy independence. I don't think he's put in one bill that would promote alternative energy or renewable energy. Any of these things that you're talking about, if I'm elected to Congress, I'm going to put in legislations that will give tax incentives and tax breaks so that it makes it more economically viable for somebody who wants to promote these interests to make it a business and mass produce it so that people can use it. The technology is there. We have just chosen not to really mass produce these sort of energies. You know, back in 1973, there was the Arab oil embargo. People were sitting in line waiting for gas and grumbling and complaining. And the talk back then was, well, we need to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. We need to come up with alternative energy sources. And here we are 33 years later, and not a whole lot has happened.
Now we're addicted even worse.
Yes. I mean, I think the average mile per gallon of a vehicle now is less.
Although you realize that houses actually pollute more than cars do. The average lifespan of a car is only 7 years, whereas my house is already 100 years old. So the decisions that they made to my house are affecting my energy use 100 years later.
Right.
So from what I understand, we really need to focus on housing and let the cars ride for a while.
Well, but I'm just... In all areas, I mean, housing, cars,
yes.
Factories, you know, it's affecting the ozone. It's
yes.
affecting many, many things. And so we have to have an energy policy other than looking for more oil. You know, we need to get away from the fossil fuel, you know,
yeah.
oil energy sources and start doing a lot of inventive things, a lot of creative things to reduce our dependence on oil and coal and whatever it is that we're using.
Well, I know from having built VCU's recycling program and having brought them from 32 to 307 tons in 2 years and earned them a $5.43 profit per ton that and building WRIR that where there's a will, there's a way, no will, no way. And it's interesting to me that the Republicans say that we're the party of morality and ethics, they say, well, you know, conservation is a great personal virtue. Well, I thought they were all about personal virtues and putting them into law. So, you know, these funny tensions. And so I just want to try to get specifics so that, you know, the devil's in the details, they say.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I know one of the...
I mean, I any policy that would promote an alternative energy source, I think is a good thing. And I would provide tax incentives and other sort of incentives to promote those sort of alternative energies. Renewable energy sounds like a good idea to me. It makes sense to me. Alternative energy, you know, biodiesel with soy, et cetera. I mean, all these things are good. We just need to sort of move on down the road and sort of expand on all these things as the new technologies come along. It can't be business as usual, not only when it comes to energy, but the entire way that Washington is run. I mean, you're not going to change these things until you change the process of power in Washington, because you're going to have the same people up there being influenced by the same people, the ones that have the money now. And until you get people of a like mind who are willing to change things the way things are done in Washington, you're going to have a hard time changing energy policy.
So public financing of elections?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's what I'm calling on, public financing of elections, so that everybody is playing on the same level field. You take the lobbyists right out of it and the money out of it. A bipartisan independent redistricting commission that will redraw the districts so that they're competitive, so that they're compact, so they have commonality of interest. Just like the statute mandates, because the 7th Congressional District, as well as the 3rd Congressional District, they're gerrymandered districts. They're ridiculous. And there are districts like that all over the country. It's a disservice to the people. It stifles competition.
Speaking of that,
yes.
There's a funny little zigzag through Chesterfield County in your district. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that this will have these irregularities brought forth by the ACLU will affect your candidacy in Chesterfield?
Well, you mean talking about voting in Chesterfield?
Yes. The ACLU has cited these underlined reasons as for asking the Department of Justice to...
Yeah, I think they potentially could. I think the registrar down there is, you know, taking a very skewed, narrow reading of the statute. And, you know, even though the State Board of Elections has said that now you don't really have to do what you're doing, one has to wonder whether he's trying to suppress voting, especially African-American voting, in Chesterfield County. And I think that the Chesterfield Democrat Committee has certainly taken him to task, but they're having problems because I think one of their electoral board members, who's supposedly a Democrat, is not really fighting on their side. Mm. And when they recommend somebody else to the circuit court judge, he ignores the recommendation and disappoints the same old person. So it's sort of an inside game when it comes to the electoral board and what's happening down there. It potentially is a big problem. If it's a close election, then it may be something for the courts.
You're not going to just concede if it looks like...
No, if it's a close election and I see election irregularities, yeah, there'll be a court fight. Absolutely. Yeah.
You had enough?
Yeah. I've had more than enough. I remember talking to my wife and hearing all this stuff that was coming from the administration about the Iraq war and, you know, how all these Republicans like Eric Cantor and George Allen are just falling in line, mm-hmm. playing off the same playbook, just saying the same, you know, sort of idiotic, you know, parroting things. I just said, you know, I can't take this anymore. I've got to run. You know, somebody's got to step up to the plate, because everybody was afraid. They go, oh my God, you can't win the 7th Congressional District. It's the fourth most Republican district in the United States. It's like committing suicide. What are you, crazy? Are you a martyr? And I said, I don't care. I'm going to run anyway. I don't care. I can't stand anymore. I've got to do something about it. Somebody's got to stand up and have courage. And, you know, right or wrong, win or lose, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to hopefully get people thinking, and people are going to have a choice this time. You know, they can continue with Eric Cantor and, you know, stay the course in the Iraqi war and everything else that's going on in this country, or they can vote for change. It depends on whether they've had enough or not. You know, maybe they haven't had enough. Maybe they need some more. Maybe they need this administration to beat up on them and pummel them some more before they do something about it. And, you know, I don't think this is a particular original sort of philosophy I have, but, you know, I believe that people get involved in politics because something, one issue usually, directly affects their lives and it drives them into political action. And, you know, I understand that people are busy. You know, they're raising families, they're working, they're struggling to make a living, they're struggling to find some time where they can have a good time. Mm-hmm. And you know, politics is something is a necessary evil to them. They just are not really tuned in. The what they know about politics and the candidates is basically what they see on TV or maybe because of a phone call or something. Mm-hmm. And that's a shame. People in a representative democracy, people in order for it to work correctly, people need to be vigilant. They need to be involved. They need to be plugged in to their democracy. Otherwise, you allow these people to control everything. And so, yes, people have to take personal responsibility. And that's what I'm doing. I'm saying I've had enough. I can't stand anymore. I'm running. I'm going to put myself out there, you know.
Yeah.
And hopefully people, I'll have a good message and people will believe in it. And they'll give me a chance to try and make these changes I'm talking about. And you know, they shouldn't. I mean, I think I'm a pretty good person, but, you know, they shouldn't trust me either. They should be watching me and making sure I do the right thing. Because, again, the system is very alluring, very tempting. And, you know, Eric Cantor, he's a career politician. He absolutely is a career politician. I mean, what else would he be doing? He'd be working in his daddy's law firm. And nothing against his dad, but you know, he does major, you know, debt collection for Henrico County in the city of Richmond. And Eric Cantor worked in his law firm. I don't know that Eric Cantor has particularly tried many cases in any of the courts of the Commonwealth. So, you know, I'm sure he has a job in his dad's law firm. But, you know, other than that, he is a career politician. This is what he does for a living. I'm not a career politician. I'm a lawyer. I'm a sole practitioner. I'm in a limited liability partnership with my partner, Jay Squires. And, you know, we're like small businessmen. We have rent to pay. We have utilities to pay, secretary to pay. We know what it is to meet overhead. And I don't think that Eric Cantor understands that. He doesn't have that sort of perspective. He's a millionaire. Look at his stock portfolio. You can go online and look at his report to the clerk of the House of Representatives, and he's done very well. And I congratulate him. He's a good investor. But not everybody is like that. And, you know, people have to work, and I understand that. But, you know, people also have to take control of their destiny and of their government. And until they do, until we change things in Washington, all these wonderful issues we are talking about probably are not going to change.
Thought I'd run through some of the questions that remain from our listeners or have occurred in conversations, and then I guess we'll just back up and you can answer the ones you want. Given that so few Congress critters find their own children in Iraq, what do you propose to do about the rich in Congress sending the children of the poor off to fight wars that primarily benefit the economic elite who will not go themselves? Another one, what is the purpose of taxes? Why do Democrats so often let Republicans say tax cut and the Democrats do not reply with the phrase replaced with services cut to control the framing? Why does it seem that poor conservatives vote more than poor liberals?
That's a lot of questions. Taxes, we've had a little bit of debate about estate taxes, mm-hmm. whether we should get rid of it or not.
I'm the executor of my grandmother's estate.
Right. Right. And my dad died in 2005, and my sisters and I are dealing with his estate. And there's estate tax implications for me. And I'm not particularly liking estate taxes because it's costing me and my sisters money. And it has cost us money. And you know, so the normal reaction is, well, you know, didn't my dad get taxed on this stuff when he made this money? Right. And now he's getting taxed again. It seems unfair. And I think it is unfair, but at the same time, with most of the people who have this kind of wealth, they never really were taxed on the income in the first place. And there is the conundrum. If we had a fair tax system, one that could be understood by people other than tax attorneys and CPAs, where everybody paid their fair proportionate share, then we wouldn't even have to be talking about the estate tax.
This is WRIR's election special interview with Jim Nachman, candidate opposite Eric Cantor for the U.S. House of Representatives seat in the 7th District of Virginia. We invited Eric Cantor, whose secretary responded with, quote, "We can't help you this year." So, unlike WRVA and Fox News, we have gone out of our way ahead of this interview to offer opportunity for dialogue. This is part two.
And so, you know, I'm a Democrat who would like to keep taxes as low as possible. But at the same time, when you talk about taxes, you have to talk about services, just like you said. You have to put everything on the table. People want government services. They want roads. They want this. They want that. Fine. Let's put it all on the table and let's have a meaningful discussion about it. As far as the federal government is concerned, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have a balanced budget on the federal level. We have it here in Virginia, and it's constitutionally mandated that we have a balanced budget in Virginia. Why not have the same thing in the federal government? It would force everybody to actually put everything on the table, and you just wouldn't be able to just spend, which is what the Republicans are doing now. You know, it's fine to say, well, the Democrats are liberal, they're tax and spend liberals. Well, you know, at least when you're a tax and spend liberal, you're paying for things. I mean, now the Republicans are just spending and not paying for things. And we're increasing our national debt and we're increasing our budget deficit. And guess who's holding the notes? The Chinese. Who's going to pay for all this? And what is probably the number one budget outlay in the federal budget? It's to pay the interest on the debt. There's something wrong about it. How can Republicans say that they're fiscal conservatives when they're acting so irresponsibly? People need to know this, and I don't think the average person on the street really does understand it. And so Democrats need to tell people that, you know, this, the Republicans are totally fiscally irresponsible. And you need to talk about services with taxes at the same time. You cannot allow Republicans to get away with, and George Allen is doing this to Jim Webb right now in his commercials. You know, Jim Webb is going to raise your taxes. This is always what the Republicans do near Election Day. They always return to the theory that people vote their pocketbooks, and the closer you get to Election Day, the money issues come to the forefront. I think it's a smart strategy. And I think that in order to be successful, we have to answer those sort of attacks and tell the truth.
How do you answer them when the media so often has three conservatives on Fox News for every one liberal?
It's a problem. It's a problem. And it's a problem I'm sure that Jim Webb is struggling with. He's trying to say the best things that he can say to move the people as much as they can be moved. It would probably be my problem as well. If Eric Cantor thought I was threatening him, I'm sure he would be attacking me. And I think that he just is taking the strategy not to engage me, much to the detriment of the voters, I might add. I'm sure he'd be calling me some sort of liberal. You have to have a media that is fair, and the Democrats right now, given the present system, have to have enough money to answer. And unfortunately, Democrats usually have less money than Republicans do. Again, it goes right back to what I've been saying. If the system was different, then we'd all have the same money if we had publicly financed elections, and people could answer back and forth, and there could be a meaningful discussion of the issues.
Of course, the radical right's still going to have these tens of thousands of religious stations, and the left has, what, 200 or 300 Pacifica stations.
Well, I mean, they,
you know, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, but you you could still institute a system of elections with public financing where people had to be given the same amount of airtime.
Actually, that's already the law.
Right.
But you, as you noted, you had to go for it.
Right.
Yeah.
You have to, first of all, you have to know about your opponent's ad, and then you have to actually, you know, I think it requires you to maybe to go look at their logs.
Well, we were very proactive. We reached out to Cantor and
right.
pretty much called them constantly saying, hey, look, we're going to do this. You want part or not?
I don't think that Eric Cantor wants to engage me. He's been invited to a number of different events. I know he was invited to the Chesterfield Business Council. In fact, they canceled a program and invited him and didn't invite me. And then we demanded that we be invited. And Eric Cantor's response was, well, I was going to speak on Israel, but now I guess I have to speak on something more political. And then they disinvited both of us, which was, and the excuse was that they wanted to concentrate on the Board of Supervisors race. So that was disappointing. That was an opportunity where I could actually be in the same room with him. He was invited to the Chesterfield Bar Association and spoke to their dinner. And I was very disappointed. I talked to Mary Adams, who I guess is president of the Chesterfield Bar Association. And I complained and said, you know, you've invited this guy to speak before your group and you're not inviting me. And I'm actually somebody who practices in the Chesterfield courts, who have been recognized by the Chesterfield Bar at their annual dinner 2 years ago for my pro bono work representing women seeking protective orders. And my question to her was, has Eric Cantor you ever seen him in court in Chesterfield County? And of course she couldn't answer that question. And I know that Congregation Ora Atid this Sunday had invited Eric Cantor to come and talk with me, and he has yet to respond to them. And I'm going anyway.
Right.
So I could go on and on, but there's just he has taken the tack that he's just gonna put his commercial out there, and hopefully people will not be engaged, and they will be fooled.
Yeah.
By him.
A lot of people, including progressives, get angry at me when they start complaining to me about something, and I have two questions for them. Number one was, did you vote? And if they said yeah, no, then I'm like, well, what are you complaining about? And then the second one was, oh, I don't have time for this or that. Did you watch television? If you watch TV, then you had the time.
Sure.
You could have made the choice to not watch TV.
It's a matter of priorities.
Yes.
You know, something was more important to them.
Yeah.
The
TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, one of the reasons I was so glad to get the radio station going was that I could get out of doing television, because TV makes you sit down and drool at the TV. Radio, you can take with you. You can be working on the yard, changing the diapers, walking the dog. You can be doing the things that make your life happen and be picking up music, relaxation, information, debates. It you can remain engaged in your life. And so that's why I'm glad that you chose to come.
Thank you.
Share your thoughts.
Thank you for inviting me and giving me this opportunity.
Why does it seem that poor conservatives vote more than poor liberals?
I don't know. I guess it's because there are a couple of issues that are driving them that really, you know, hits at their sense of values. I don't know the answer to that question specifically.
Oh, that's a short one.
Yeah.
All right.
I would hope that would change. I mean, because, you know, and I'll be honest with you, one of the reasons I don't know how to answer that question is because, you know, what exactly is a liberal and what exactly is a conservative?
Good reply.
I mean, these labels, you know, we could bring moderates in it too. I mean, what does that mean? What to be a liberal or to be a conservative? I imagine on some issues, I'm probably, depending on who's looking at me, might be very conservative. And then others, I might be very liberal. But then to somebody else who might not agree with that person's, you know, estimation. So I think these labels are sort of meaningless. So I don't know really how to answer the question.
Okay. Given that Citgo, gasoline and oil, would send the money away from the Saudis that have been proven to have funded the terrorists, would you support government agencies purchasing their fuel from Citgo as a demonstrable way to say, we withdraw our support from those who fund terrorists?
Well, I think that that would be a start, yes. I don't know that it's a doable thing. But, you know, again, if we came up with alternative energy sources, we could tell the Saudi Arabians and the rest of the Persian Gulf states to basically go drink their oil, which would make me very happy. So we wouldn't have to be making the choice between bad and worse.
Right.
So
well, eventually,
I mean,
we'll have plug-in hybrids off the solar panels, but not tomorrow.
Right. You know, that's a tough call. I mean, to the extent that the Saudi royal family has endorsed terrorism, I think they have to a large extent supported terrorists, but at the same time, they've sort of squelched terrorism at the same time.
Yes.
There's a balance there, and
I think
the balance is to there's a reason for that. They have an interest in keeping the oil flowing and us buying it.
Yes. They also need to keep down their poor, so they
right.
fund these religious right wing Wahhabi sects.
Well, because they're placating them, so
yes.
they won't be overthrown.
Exactly.
They're making a deal with the devil, so to speak.
And we've had our deals with devils. We have
sure.
Homegrown terrorists like Timothy McVeigh and the
well,
people who...
But we deal with the Saudi family all the time.
Yes, we do.
I believe George W. Bush's dad is intimately involved with them and has been over the years.
His great-grandfather, Prescott Bush, was convicted of selling oil to the Nazis during World War II.
Well...
That's the way I'm reading it.
I think it's not a bad idea to buy from other people when we can.
Yes.
But then again, I think Americans, although they are would like to take the moral high ground, they're going to be very concerned about how much the oil costs.
Yes.
And so I would like to try and get away from this because, you know, Americans are not going to be too happy with spending another dollar for a gallon of gas just to make a moral point.
I think it'd be more like 5 cents, but
well, if it's just 5 cents and that, you know,
it varies. It's like, it's a commodity,
but you know,
it varies from day to day.
I would like to see how that works. You know, whether the Venezuelans could produce what we need.
Right. No, they can't, but not all government agencies are going to
right.
pick up all the oil. So
I mean, I would hope that we could, you know, pursue a different course so that we wouldn't have to make these sort
yeah,
of choices.
Just say no to oil.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on possibly a return of the draft? If wealthy Congress folks are willing to send other people's kids off to war, do we bring the realism back? I mean, Webb's son is in Iraq.
I know.
And
I'm not for the draft.
Okay.
I'm not for the draft. I mean, obviously... If you had a draft, the administration would think twice because it would be so politically unpopular because it would be affecting every American family.
Yes.
And not just the poor.
Yes.
And I've seen these programs on TV that, you know, they have these military recruiters going into the poor neighborhoods
yes.
recruiting people. And I think that that's reprehensible, promising them all sorts of things. It's not right. I mean, obviously, the military is I'm 100% behind the military. I mean, the military affords some young people some wonderful opportunities. I don't want to discount that, but I don't like the way I think some military recruiters are taking advantage of poor, undereducated people. I think it's wrong. I think the bottom line is we shouldn't really go to war unless it's absolutely necessary. And I think that if we do go to war, everybody should sacrifice. Everybody should serve in a way that they're making a contribution to the war effort. I don't think it should be just the poor.
Right.
And I'm sure you're wondering exactly how that would be, but I think everybody has a contribution to make, whether it's...
how do you do that without the draft?
Well, I mean, you can do a draft, but you would have to do it in such a way where people are making their contributions that they can, both young and old, men and women.
Sure, there's domestic
people who are physically capable or not physically capable. I mean, I think there's a way... I know the Israeli army, everybody has to serve in that society, and no matter who you are. You know, although I'm not for the draft, I think that in times of war, everybody should make a contribution in some fashion. I don't know how you do that without a draft.
Right.
Maybe a modified sort of draft. Or maybe coming up with a system that, well, if you do participate, you get this or you get that. You know, maybe you could, for people who participate in the war effort, everybody gets a tax break or something. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm open to ideas on this. But, you know, as far as a draft right now, I don't think it's necessary. I think what we need to do is get out of Iraq.
Right.
I don't think we need to be there. I don't think we're like faced with the sort of immediate threat that requires us to be at war.
Right. Yeah, at least when Lincoln suspended habeas corpus, the Confederates actually had a real army that was really standing and really could walk over and shoot at the Union.
Right.
I mean, there was something really there.
Right. And that's why it was a mistake to go into Iraq. I mean, if it had been true that they had weapons of mass destruction and there was evidence that they were thinking about using them
on us
or even on one of our allies for that matter, then yes, I could see us going to war. But what we were told was not true.
I thought that was fascinating because George Bush's dad has the receipts. To me, this is even worse. George Bush's dad has the receipts for the weapons of mass destruction that he sold to Saddam. Move forward 10 years, where did they go? I got the receipt in one hand, and I got bunkers in the other hand. Where did they go?
He used them against the Kurds, and he used them against the Iranians.
Yeah, it's no wonder the Kurds don't trust us.
Right.
Yeah. We bore false witness to them. We as a nation, not you and me, but we
I don't know that we... When we gave Saddam Hussein the money, or I don't know whether he actually bought the chemical weapons for us or whether he bought them elsewhere, but I don't think we intended for the Kurds to be gassed.
No, but when we told the Kurds, go ahead and revolt.
Well, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. I'm sure they remember it quite well. So there's just a few left, and we only have about 4 or 5 minutes, and thank you very much. John Richmond asks, as congressman, what would you support doing in the first 100 days of next Congress? How about the first 100 hours? And he's mentioning that Nancy Pelosi has expounded a 100-day agenda and a 100-hour agenda.
Well, I wonder what Nancy Pelosi has in mind.
I don't have that right in front of me.
Neither do I.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the very first thing I would do is exactly what I've been talking about throughout this whole interview is change the system. Publicly finance elections, redistricting. I would attack the system itself and the way business is done in Washington so that we have a fair electoral system and so that people can actually hear a reasonable discussion of the issues so that in the House of Representatives, so people can vote actual measures up or down. I think there's a problem. You know, you introduce a piece of legislation and by the time it works its way through the system, there's so many amendments and riders to it. It has no semblance of what it looked like. You know, so you can't actually vote a particular measure up or down based on the merits anymore. It's so convoluted.
Right.
So I think that needs to be changed as well. It is a system that is just incomprehensible to the average American. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are just sort of disinterested because they go, it's just a mess up there. You know, it's just crazy and I'm not going to have anything to do with it. And a lot of people, I was reading in the paper that back in 1948, Truman called the Republican controlled Congress, the do nothing Congress. And I think they met, and I might have these figures wrong, 101 days or something like that. And when this article was written, this Congress had met for 79 days. So the author of this article was saying, well, I guess this is the less than do nothing Congress. And some people respond today that, well, maybe that's a good thing. You know, the less they meet, the less mischief they can create. But literally, this Congress has done a whole lot of nothing. I can't really think of a meaningful piece of legislation.
You know, these days, the way things are going, I'm rallying for paralysis.
Well, unfortunately, that is the attitude of a lot of people, and that's sad. I mean, because there's a lot of very good things that we could be doing with government that would help people, that would make the lives of people better, that would make this country greater. And, you know, I know that reasonable minds can differ. I'm a big proponent of trying to work with the Republicans. I think there is too much political bickering in Washington, too much partisanship. It's tough because the Republican Party has become so monolithic, so one-sided. Mm-hmm. You know, everything to them is black and white, right and wrong. There's no
and then when you give a
gradations
grain of, sand,
of gray.
And then they take the next grain, and they just keep scooting forward one little grain of sand at a time.
Well, it's a problem, but, you know, as long as they are there, you know, there's got to be more civility in politics. You've got to reach out and try to work with men like John Warner and John McCain and other people who are supposedly moderate Republicans, although, yeah. You know, depending on the situation, they're not so moderate.
They might get the Jeffords treatment.
Well, you know, there's compromises that can be made. I mean, this constant fighting is not really accomplishing anything. I believe that the American people, and specifically, you know, in my case, the voters of the 7th Congressional District, mm-hmm. they want a representative who's going to go up and accomplish something.
Right.
You know, what are you doing up there? Are you just like sitting in the seat, you know, getting money? You know, when I look at Eric Cantor and I look at all of his legislation, and I saw some stuff, that's really attacking Social Security and privatized, you know, moving towards privatization of Social Security, which is what I really disagree with. Other than those and some resolutions, you know, condemning Hezbollah or supporting Israel, which I'm not discounting. But other than that, I don't really see a whole lot of meaningful legislation on his part.
Right.
So getting back to the question, I mean, I would change the system. I think everything depends on changing the system and changing the electoral system and the way business is done in Washington, the way they vote on things in Washington. That would be my agenda in the first 100 days is attacking the system and changing it, hopefully for the better.
Jim Sparks asks, given the dubious natures of electronic voting and past shenanigans, would you support, and I know we sort of already asked that question, mm-hmm. but he adds another thought. Would you support an airport-style homeland security effort to protect against election fraud? What would you suggest?
Airport-style homeland security. Boy, what would that involve? That's a tough one. Yes and no. I mean, if it means doing what this guy in Chesterfield County is doing, no, because that scares some people away from the polls. I mean, I think you just have to make sure that the machines we are using have some integrity, that people can trust, like I said before, that their vote is being counted correctly. Having airport security, homeland security sort of things, no, I wouldn't be for that.
Okay.
I'd be for security in the sense that, you know, the machines are calculating things correctly, whatever systems we have to employ to do that, whether it's a paper backup in the machine so that if there's some sort of alleged irregularity, you can actually check it, you right. know, with actual manual
get out the
paper.
Chads.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, Chads or whether it's, you know, I don't know.
I'll take a Chad over a corrupt database.
Well, I know some of these machines do. I mean, they can have a paper backup.
Sure. Why not?
We built them. And so, you know, I guess the paper backup ought to match the electronic results.
Yeah.
If you really want to check it. And so, other than that, I would not be in favor of armed guards and metal detectors and all that kind of stuff. No, I don't think that's particularly okay. necessary at this time.
Will you be trying to bring awareness of the MCA, the Military Commissions Act, to conservatives so so that they can know that Cantor voted for, just imagine Hillary Clinton with the ability to declare gun rights advocates to be enemy combatants. You know, some of the things I hear them say on the web.
The people in the NRA wouldn't like that very much. Of course I would let them know about it. I'm going to let everybody know about it. I mean, it's a big topic of discussion. We just can't believe it. It's something that's got to be changed. That's, again, way too much power for the executive.
See, I'm thinking people who are conservative because of ideals and not because their father was conservative. I mean, they're really into the ideals of limited government.
Right.
Would be scared witless with the idea of you know, whoever demon you want to put up there, Howard Dean.
When I talk to these guys in the NRA, and I went to their banquet, you know, and I can't believe that any of those people who believe in the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms are going to be for anything like this. That's the one thing that drives them is the fear of government coming to get their guns.
Right.
And
yeah,
I'm,
in this case, they don't need to take
I'm
their guns,
actually,
they take them away.
I'm actually in agreement with them. I said, you know, I'm a believer in the Constitution. I believe in the Second Amendment, and I believe in the First Amendment, and I believe in the Fourth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, and all the amendments.
Right.
And so not just one or just a few select ones, the whole document. And so, yeah, I mean, this is something that I think that they would be totally against, and I'm obviously totally against it, and I'm willing to take that message to so-called conservatives, whatever that means, moderates, liberals, and everything in between.
Right. Jonathan Stevens asks, in light of the extreme uphill battle that you face in a district like Cantor's, please comment on Howard Dean's policy/strategy of not ignoring any district or state to demonstrate Democrats can and want to appeal to the whole nation, not just 50% plus one.
Well, he absolutely is ignoring my race. You know, he absolutely is ignoring my race, and so is the DCCC. They haven't given me one ounce of help at all. So, I mean, he can...
He meaning Howard Dean?
Yeah.
Okay.
He can talk like that, but it, you know, I haven't really seen any support from the DNC or the DCCC. I've gotten support from grassroots Democrats. I've gotten support from Governor Kane, from Mark Warner, from Dickie Cranwell, from Frank Hall, from Brian Moran. I've gotten support from these folks, but as far as any big money from the National Democratic Party or the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, I have not received one dime from them, nor have I received any in-kind help from them, which is extremely disappointing. They have this red-to-blue strategy, and unless you're considered a competitive race, you get nothing from them.
Right.
And so I'm kind of out here alone carrying the banner of the Democratic Party. And I'm proud to do that. I just wish they would help me more because it's sort of a chicken or egg proposition. I truly believe that if I had the resources to bring this message to the people, I could actually have a shot of winning this thing. And I know this because everywhere I go, and I've been all over the district multiple times, when I talk to people, and I don't care who they are, Republicans, independents, I can turn them. I say to them, I don't care whether you're a Republican. You can vote for me. Let me tell you why you should vote for me. And if I can talk to them, I can convince them to vote for me. Absolutely. 9 times out of 10. I wish I had more help from the DNC and from Chairman Dean and other folks like him.
Jill,
what was the gun rights one?
He says, this may seem like an issue from the past, but there are still many Virginia voters who have been convinced they cannot vote for Democrats because they will take their guns away.
I'm for for the Second Amendment and for your right to have guns.
Well,
in fact, I own weapons myself. I think most of the legislation that you have seen is trying to strike out a crime. You know, we can't talk about the government coming to take away your guns and the government coming to take you away.
Yeah. That just takes it to a whole new level.
Yes.
The MCA.
So, exactly.
Well, I think that about does it then, unless you have any final thoughts you'd like to put out.
You know, I, just reiterating, I hope that your listeners will give me a chance. I think I am a voice for progressive change. I think I'm somebody who has... you know, the drive and the ability to get things done. I've been involved in a lot of organizations and made a lot of changes for the better. So I have a track record, even though I've never been elected official. And having never been elected official, I actually think is a positive thing. I'm not jaded. I'm not controlled. I'm not corrupted. Haven't had the chance to be corrupted. I am somebody who will have a fresh perspective and won't just be pigeonholed and have a narrow view of things. I think Jim Webb also has a fresh perspective. And I think that we Democrats are right on the issues, especially this election cycle. Our views are what I think is best for America. And I think if the voters give us a chance, we will do them proud. We'll actually do what we say we're going to do. Everything I've told you on this program, I will attempt to do and keep on fighting to accomplish these goals. And if I am there for 2 years and only 2 years, then so be it. I don't really need to be a congressman. I'm a lawyer and I'm proud to be a lawyer, and I'm doing this as a public service and not because I want to be a career politician. And if I can serve 2 years or 4 years or whatever it may be, great. And then I can come back and be a lawyer. I don't think that our founding fathers really intended for representatives to go up there and stay up there forever. And I think it's really a good thing, because I think that people get up there and they become jaded and they lose their perspective. I think people become out of touch if they're in Washington for too long a time, unless they're really, really in touch with their constituents. Eric Cantor has not been one of those people. He's become arrogant and aloof. All you have to do is talk to the people who have come in contact with him. You know, if somebody... I can't tell you how many people have written him letters and they've told me that they write him letters and about a particular issue, and he just sends them back a little, you know, pat on the head and going like, well, thank you for writing me in. Thank you for your support. And he never really said they supported him. They were trying to ask him about a serious question and he never answers it. Just like his TV commercials. Just like, you know, when we ask him, what did you know and when did you know it? There's not really a direct answer. The people deserve better.
All right. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
This was the WRIR election special interview with Jim Nachman, the candidate opposite Eric Cantor for the U.S. House of Representatives seat in the 7th District of Virginia. We did invite Eric Cantor, who declined. If you or your friends missed this interview, we will be posting it to the web. Watch out for special election coverage at WRIR.org. That's WRIR.org.